has it that it was written by the Dark Ones, Necronomicon Ex Mortis, roughly translated, Book of the Dead. The book served as a passageway to the evil worlds beyond. It was written long ago, when the seas ran red with blood. It was this blood that was used to ink the book. In the year 1300 AD, the book disappeared.
Alright, welcome back, analysis listeners. We have a loaded baked potato of a show for you, so I'm not going to spend too much time setting up the introductions for this podcast. But first, I want to bring in Jules Sipes, our old friend Jules Sipes.
Hello, welcome back, darling, to the podcast. So happy to be back.
So happy to have you. And really, the reason we've had you on multiple times on this show is for your connection to our special guest today. It's not any part of your opinions, but it's because you have this incredible link to cult
cinema
and it's a Michigan filmmaking history. So want to welcome in an icon, Ellen Sandweiss. Welcome into the podcast, Ellen.
Thank you very much. And it's the first time I've been called a loaded baked potato. So thank you.
Yes. Well, though the show is a loaded baked potato because we have a lot to get to. You're not a loaded baked potato.
Okay,
you're the icon. If anyone's a loaded baked potato, it's me.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a loaded baked potato. I'm more just like chewed bubble gum, I guess. But welcome in. So Ellen, you were a star in one of the biggest horror film cult classic movies, The Evil Dead, and we're gonna get to a lot of that experience here. And I really have been trying to have you on this podcast for multiple years, especially in the fall. So we all have our pumpkin spice lattes, right? We have the home goods decor that's starting to fill our living room spaces, maybe even our porch. Do you guys have anything on your porch yet?
I am not a Halloween person. I'm not a decorator for holidays person. I'm kind of a bah humbug.
Oh, that's really surprising.
Yeah, if you want to know the truth, yeah.
Which is one of the hilarious parts about the fact that
people are dressing up like you for Halloween.
Constantly reminded every year at this time.
Yeah, you go to these horror cons and everyone that's really into that stuff is clamoring to meet you. And you're just like, I just want to talk about my remodeled kitchen.
I don't even want to talk about that, frankly. But it's kind of one of the ironies of my life is that, first of all, I don't like horror movies.
Wow.
I'm not into dressing up. I'm not into any
worshiping
of that stuff.
And
you know,
you're not into worshiping the devil.
No.
Okay. I know it's a close-ended question, but I just want to make sure I got that. Okay.
Yeah. And people kind of expect me to be like a horror movie expert. And what I always say is I am an actress who was hired to be in a horror movie.
Yeah.
That's really all it is.
That's really so. Let's start there, and we'll get to Evil Dead. I promise everyone, don't be slamming your steering wheel and banging your keys. That we're not going right into.
They're really, really big fans.
Yes, so. But I want to start just with your how you got to the boards in the first place, because you said you are an actress that was in a horror film, but how did you? I love hearing people that are in movies and have been part of the cinematic experience, but just like how you got bit by the bug in the first place. So what was kind of your family structure like? Were you guys a creative family when you were growing up? Like, what was your first experiences getting into performance?
Yeah, so I come from a very kind of performing artsy family. My dad was a really accomplished pianist. I have three sisters, and we all did the dance lessons and the music lessons. And, you know, some of us took more of an interest than others. But I guess I started out in music. I used to play the cello from a very early age. I always sang, I always took dance lessons. And then I guess I started being in plays in school.
Okay.
Yeah. And kind of went from being in plays to, and also singing at the same time. Majored in theater in college.
Yeah. So where'd you go to school?
I went to University of Michigan.
Go Blue.
Yep. So that was kind of the origin. It was always just really in my family, although I was the only one in my family who did any kind of acting.
Okay. So, yeah. So I'm hearing a lot of music, at least. Yeah. This is a very musical, and we might talk about certain musicals that were made on some of your performances later. But you're kind of doing the acting piece, you're singing and playing music, and then you get to Michigan. And is that where you start to meet Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi? Like, what's the scene like when you guys are in Michigan, or was that before? How did that all start?
I went to high school with Bruce Campbell, Sam Raimi, a whole bunch of other guys who are also in the movie world, John Cameron, Scott Spiegel, Josh Becker. It was just this confluence of people who, you know, all ended up having careers in film. And so I guess I met Sam and Bruce from doing plays in high school at Groves in Birmingham.
Oh, it was Birmingham Groves. Okay.
Yeah. And they were already completely obsessed with filmmaking. They were making Super 8 films from the time they were, I don't know, 12 or something. Yeah. So I started being in their little Super 8 films when I was in high school. And then when I went off to college, they were still, they all kind of tried college for like a semester or maybe a year. It was very clear that they were going to be filmmakers and they did not need college.
Yeah.
So
best way to learn is by doing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So then I'm sure you've heard about Within the Woods, which was a short film they used to kind of sell to investors to make The Evil Dead, which was their first feature film. So I guess it was in my junior year, they said, do you want to take a semester off and make this horror movie? And I said, sure.
This is what I'm going to just interject right
now. Come on in.
It's my dear friend, Ellen Sandois, is game. She is game. She still is game. You go to her and you give her these proposals of you're going to be tortured and all these things are going to happen. And she's like, okay.
Why not?
But
cover me in pig's blood. Okay.
This is the part about her that keeps our relationship fun and ongoing for these, I don't know, 300 years that we've been
20,
together.
20
is that she's so game. And so when they came to her and she's in college, this Michigan student that's doing all the right things that you do to have a career. And they're like, do you want to take a semester off and go out into the woods and, you know,
be tortured?
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I that's actually really interesting to me, Julie, is that so you're this, so you've got these what some people might label as flunky high school friends that are kicking around with their Super 8 camera. And then you're this, I mean, Michigan's a big acting school. Like people, that's a lot of people.
It's the most competitive program.
Yeah, it's this incredibly competitive program. You're rocking, you're singing, you're doing plays at the University of Michigan. And then you tell all your your collaborators at U of M, yeah, I'm actually going to bail for a semester and go hang out with these dudes from Groves. Like, what was the response there from your peers?
To be honest, I don't remember. It was, you know, 1979. Mm-hmm. I think it was, I honestly don't remember. The more important thing is like, what did my parents think?
Oh yeah. What did they think?
They were like, well, there she goes again. Okay. Whatever you want to do. And, you know, I did go back to school and I got my bachelor's and I got my master's. And so, but Julie is right. She knows me so well and I love her for it. I am traditionally pretty game to do stuff.
Yeah. And as we go along through this, I mean, I will give you many examples of times when I'm thinking I'm even game and she's totally in and I just go along with her for the ride. So
some could call it stupid.
Yeah,
it's
there's got to be a little bit of stupid.
Yeah, and that's why you love me, because I don't call it stupid.
That's right.
I want to give your parents some praise for supporting that. And I actually did. I know this might be a little off topic, but I was reading Seth Rogen's book. It's called Your Book. And he talks. Yeah. So he gives his mother a lot of credit because he's in middle school. And he says, I think I want to try stand-up comedy. And, you know, a lot of parents would go, that's stupid, or, you know, stay in school, or however you want it. And she,
back up.
Her first instinct was to search. I don't think they had Google search at the time, but to search around for whatever resources that she had and, you know, find a little comedy training site and enroll her kid and, you know, sign a paper that said he's okay to hang out in bars, you know, in Canada. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she really supported that. And, you know, when he was in high school and he's like, hey, I think I want to, you know, try this experiment and move out to LA and try a career in performing arts, they supported that. And, you know, it takes kind of a little bit of that crazy. And a lot of people have the way that we should roll through life, and the artist journey doesn't necessarily align with that. So for your parents to go, okay, yep, you know, this is the spirit of my daughter, and to support that, and know you're going to find your way and make the right choices, but you know,
you're giving my parents a lot of credit.
Okay. So maybe I was assuming.
No, I'm going to say, knowing Ellen's mother a lot more than I knew her dad, that Miriam was very quietly supportive.
She was hands-off once we got into college. It was like, it wasn't really, I wouldn't call it supportive. I would just call it hands off, let her do what she'll do.
And supportive in the way that she would say, and I think Miriam would back me up on this, that Ellen could do anything and be great at it.
Yeah.
And so I think when you're raised in that way, and Ellen knows very well, and it gets on her last nerve, but I think that Miriam raised her and her siblings that whatever they did, they would be great at it. Yeah. And so I think that's really a lesson in parenting for you to take with you, is that support. Miriam was not calling agents.
A little different than Kristen Bell's experience.
Miriam was like at the symphony and doing her own thing when Ellen was at college, but she would just say, you know, whatever Ellen's going to do, she's going to kill it. She's going to be great at it. And that's,
of course, she said that to you. She didn't ever say that to me.
No, why would
she? But that's okay. I love her. Okay. She's 93 years old. She's still, you know.
And if we asked her now on this podcast, she would say the same.
She would say it now. She
actually, I'm patching in right now.
Miriam. Birmingham, Michigan.
Miriam. No,
this is your life.
I don't have Miriam, unfortunately. She declined my offer to be on this. She declined my offer for comment. Sometimes parents, you know, it's whatever my child will do, they'll be successful. Or sometimes a parent will say, this is the only thing you're skillful at. If you don't succeed here, you'll die. So I'll also support that. So, but no, you were the other road. So you get the call. Did they call you? Was there an audition process? Like, how do you get kind of folded into this project?
No, I mean, I'm going to use the word friends. And I'm still good friends with Bruce now.
Oh, really?
But back in the day, they were so singularly focused on making movies they were friends with people who did what they did. You know, they were friends with people who were in their movies. And it, so, yeah, I was one of the gang, but it was very much a boys' club. And I was the girl in the movies when they needed a girl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So then, so they said, well, hey, we made this thing. We have a budget now. We need you to come on. Like, you give us this University of Michigan prestige credibility. Or how did they,
First they said, let's, over the summer, I think, they said, let's make this short called Within the Woods, mm-hmm. That will help draw investors and show what we can do. And in Within the Woods, I loved it because I was the, Bruce was the monster. Bruce was the possessed one. And I got to kill him in various ways. Yeah. So I wish it would have stayed that way.
Yeah, me too.
And it's like, then you get the budget and he's like, all right, I'm the sexy guy with the chainsaw. We're going to murder Ellen.
Exactly. So yeah, first we made that. And then, no auditions necessary because I'd been acting with them since I was 16. So
yeah,
They
knew what you could do.
And then it was the usual, like when you have no budget, we're going to do it in Michigan in September. And then it was, we're going to do it in Michigan at the end of October. And then it was, okay, now it's too cold in Michigan. So we're going to do it, you know, in December in Tennessee. So it was that kind of thing.
Oh, wow. So it went to all those places or did it end up in Tennessee? Sorry, I thought it was filmed in Michigan. So.
No. So it was originally supposed to be in Michigan, but you know, they kept having these delays. And so then it was going to be too cold in Michigan. So they decided to make it in Tennessee.
What town in Tennessee?
Morristown, Tennessee, which is outside of Knoxville.
Okay.
And then Tennessee went on to have its coldest winter in,
of course,
you know, history. So yeah, it still was really cold, but not Michigan cold.
Yeah. And let's get into the filming experience. So you're reading the script. There's a lot of stuff that happens to your character that is just, you know.
I would say the most stuff.
The most stuff happens to your character. But it was the experience like making the movie up there in Chile, Tennessee.
Where do I begin?
Yeah.
We had no money. So everything was just, and also I was 20. I turned 21 on the set.
Oh, fine. Is there a little birthday party, a little shots going around?
Probably shots not. Going I don't think so. Shots
going around. Something was going around. It may have been something else.
Yeah.
No, it was in the 70s.
So we were all, Sam was probably 21. Bruce was maybe 22. I think the oldest person on the set, there was one person who we thought was really old. I think that was the sound guy because he was in his early 30s. But everybody was in their early 20s except for that. So, we all lived together in this shitty ranch house, all the girls in one room, boys in another, the rest sleeping on the couch, cast and crew. The special effects guy would be boiling chicken bones on the stove to make, you know, props next to the pot of chili that the guy who was supposedly our cook was making. And
craft services.
It was really, really, really low budget.
Yeah, that does not sound like the food layout that I hear.
I think that adds to the creepiness.
The pot of chili and the chicken buns.
Yeah, and the fact that they were all these kids getting together, putting on a show, if you'll forgive my MGM musical reference, but it is. It's like, let's do this movie. And they're all there. I think that you can feel that in the film when you watch it, that you're all bonded.
You know, maybe this is part of my kind of bah humbug personality, but
You're like, no, it was an ass pain. No,
it sounds really, you know, romantic and you can glorify it, but really it was hard work. It was very uncomfortable. I think I didn't know the other actors except Bruce. The other actors did audition. And but anyway, you know, I mean, it was exhilarating because I was 20 years old and I was off making a feature film, you know, so that was kind of fun. And when they weren't being like seriously driven to push on and drive us to get every shot, Bruce and Sam are a riot. I mean, they were and still are like the funniest people I know. So there was that.
It's interesting that they were drawn to such a dark theme. If they're such funny guys, you'd figure they'd want to make like indie comedies.
It was absolutely financial. If you look at filmmakers now and then, horror is an entry drug. It's an entry into the bigger world of filmmaking because horror movies sell.
Yeah.
And so it was absolutely, I mean, I don't know. You'd have to interview Sam and Rob and Bruce, but that was pretty much the reason they did it.
Yeah. What was his directing style? Was he pretty collaborative? Like, did he take a lot of Europe, or was he very focused? And did he break it down specifically? Like, what was the experience like being directed by Sam? I'll call him Sam.
Sam. I'm sure he's learned a lot of things in what is it, 40
years of filmmaking.
40 years of, yeah. So he was also 20 years old, you know. At that time, his style of filmmaking was, okay, Ellen, in this scene, fall to the ground and bang your fists three times against the ground. Mm-hmm. And that was his
direction.
He was a very technical director. He was really good with camera angles and special effects and all that stuff. Not what you would call an actor's director.
Oh, okay.
You know?
What's your motivation?
Exactly.
Okay, now we're going to really break down the sister right now. No one likes her. She's on the trip, but she's not really invited. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had to kind of create a lot of that on your own. Did you kind of do some of that work with the rest of the cast, the background work, or did you guys just kind of go, let's get makeup on and get weird?
Yeah. There were no.
Yeah.
The answer is no. The answer is Sam told us where to go and what to do and how much blood to spurt out of our mouths and how loud to scream and how fast to run. And that's what we did.
I just love this whole thing. I just love it, love it, love it. I think the process is amazing. And I think that when I've watched the film, knowing Ellen as well as I do, I'm thinking, okay, she hated doing that. I can't believe she did that. I can't believe she's down in the basement. I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe how stupid she, like, Ellen would never make these decisions.
Yeah, like, there's so many.
In that moments. Part, it's the greatest acting thing I've ever seen because all of it is so not in her personality to do these dumb things that she does in the movie. So I just love it. And it's got I know because I read a lot about it that, and Ellen would know this firsthand, but Bruce and Sam Raimi are credited with saying that it's like the Three Stooges in horror film. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of it, Ellen does love because Ellen loves shtick. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's the shticky part that I think made Ellen, it got her through the filming experience.
You're absolutely correct. You are absolutely correct.
And I think that's why the film has withstood the test of time is because there is a comedic, campy aspect of it that never gets old. The shtick never gets old. So that's just my input there on that part.
You know, I think actually you should be interviewing Julie for this because
I'm a big fan.
Well, she's absolutely right. And like, I mean, so I, humor to me is
that that's it.
The reason for existing. And in high school, they were so into the Three Stooges that like I would walk down the hall with Bruce and he'd have his arms loaded with books. And then with no warning, he'd do a flip in the air, throw the books all over and land on his back. And I would be, to this dying. Day, Bruce just has to walk into a room and I get hysterical. Mm-hmm. So it was laughter that, and Sam is almost even more funny than Bruce, although he doesn't let it out very often. I mean, they are the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
They're two of the Three Stooges. So anyway, but and yeah, that was definitely what kept me going. And like Jewel said, I mean, I was game. It's like, yeah, I don't like this. Like, this is not my thing. But, you know, I did what I needed to do to get the job done.
Yeah, yeah.
If you see the DVR, the DVD or the their outtakes, and you see the torture that she went through. I mean, there's tons of outtakes. You can see them on YouTube.
Yeah.
Being hung by a ceiling and there's all kinds of stuff that she was tortured with. And so she was like, was she the Curly? Was she the Mo? I think she was the third Stooge. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And you see some of that in later when all the Spider-Man movies and they'll bring Bruce back to do little bits. And, you know, it's very the camp and the cheese. And you know that they have that in them. Yeah. But it's a rocking movie. I mean, they really ended. And as Evil Dead continued to evolve, you know, it got pretty badass and you know that, but is that, so you think the camp and that's why this has stood the test of time? When people come and talk to you about the movie, that's a lot of the reasons why they say they love it so much.
Yeah, it's the over the topness, if that's a term. It's like,
it is now.
You know, it's how much blood can we spurt, how many limbs can we chop off, like nobody's done this before, let's chop that off. Let's use some oatmeal to come out of, you know, let's color it green and have that. It was just completely over the top. And I think that's why people like it.
I love the creativeness with the props and the claymation. Love it. Yeah, I mean, think about all the different horror films that have come out, especially in that time. I mean, the 70s and the 80s were just huge for, it was like the golden era of horror. None of those have musicals that travel the country still. Right. They don't have splash bags and you buy ponchos like it's Gallagher. Like, no, none of them have that. Right. Yeah. That was the whole thing was the excess, you know, almost like Tarantino level excess of the gore. They were having a good time with it. That's what people are there to see, you know, so it's and no one's watching a Halloween Michael Myers musical. Right. So it's like it has that when you watch the movie, when you watched it, when it first screened or if you've watched it, I don't know when the most recent time you've rewatched Evil Dead is, but how do you feel when you watch yourself in it?
Mortified would be a good word.
Is it? Yeah. Do you kind of watch through your fingers, like when people hear themselves on a voice message machine, or like are you kind of just like red, or how does it feel?
Well, let's start out by saying I don't like to watch myself or hear myself in anything. So I'm one of those people. So, but you know I'm sure you're going to ask about the woods scene, so I'll cut you off at the pass. That scene has really been the cause of most of my mortification. Mm-hmm. And I've come, you know, I decided at one point just to have a sense of humor about it. And that really helped. And now, you know, now I can joke about it. And
actually, when I met Ellen, this is our children are dear, dear, dear friends. Yeah. And they met in second grade. and Ellen came to pick up Allie from our house from a play date. And I saw her and I said, oh my God. I mean, I knew who she was. Mm-hmm. And I thought, do I say it? Am I just going to stand here and not say it? And I said it. And she's like, oh my God, I can't even talk about this. I mean, I have children.
Yeah.
This,
yeah.
This experience, it's not something that I want my children to be aware of.
Yeah.
Like I was going to go and say, she didn't know me at all. And it was like, am I going to go to her child and say, did you know that your mom was raped in the forest?
Yeah.
You know, she didn't know. And so I think that part of being a young mom in, come on, Huntington Woods is like suburbia of suburbia. And then having this iconic role.
Yeah. That's like the biggest.
She wasn't thrilled. I'm going to tell you, at that time, she was not thrilled.
Yeah. And if the horror Comic-Con people, like when they're going and they're getting the Evil Dead signatures, like they're going to go to Ellen first because that's the scene. Yeah. It's like Bruce and Ellen. Those are the two like biggest, most iconic scenes, you know? And it's like every kid, if you're afraid of the forest, it like, it starts with Wizard of Oz, right? And the spooky trees that are throwing the apples. And then you get to high school and someone passes you, you know, cause Evil Dead gets handed around like the Bible for horror film turds, you know, but you know, they pass you Evil Dead and that brings a whole new element to Spooky Forest, right? But yeah, the cabin in the woods, this is the quintessential like cabin in the woods, and that's the like definition. The scene. Yeah.
It's the definition. And I think that also Ellen is a feminist and she's a very brilliant woman. And the mm-hmm. thought that she would make these dumps. And she's a perfectionist, so she's thinking to herself, oh my God, this performance, I'm going to be known for this because I've actually done Shakespeare. Like I've done meaty work. She still, you know, does work. So it's.
Well, Bruce has always said, you know, how ironic it is that he is best known in all his years of acting. He's best known for The Evil Dead, in which he was a terrible actor. You know,
it's his worst stuff.
Was just learning. You know, we were all so young, and that's what that we're all known for.
Johnny Depp, Matthew McConaughey.
Everyone starts in horror. Yeah.
Renee Zellweger. I mean, they all start, and that's where you start.
Mm-hmm. Well, to what Julie was just talking about, I did. You know. The movie was made before there were even video rentals.
Yeah.
So my feeling at the time was, okay, if this turns out really badly, it doesn't matter. Nobody's going to see it. It's going to be in these, you know, low level film houses, and then it'll go away. And
she know I was.
And then I just, then they started video rentals and I'm like, okay. Uh-oh. And then, you know, it was like this whole evolution. And I was not telling anybody. I was not telling my kids. I had, you know, rules in my head about what age they would need to be if they ever needed to watch it. And then I just got to a point where I couldn't deny it anymore because it was, you know, there were t-shirts
oh my with God.
My face on it.
Mm-hmm. There's a store in downtown Royal Oak called Monkey 7. It's still there.
Exactly. It's still there.
There are still Evil Dead t-shirts in that window today.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
And we would go to Funky 7 and we would buy these Evil Dead t-shirts.
I want one. Sorry, Ellen. And I want
I'm
one.
I'm telling you, there's no escaping it. But of course, Allie was.
So, you know, so at that point, I decided both to have a sense of humor about it and... you know, I mean, everybody who knows anything about The Evil Dead knows that we all got, we were paid basically nothing. And then we all signed horrible contracts that signed away our rights to everything. So none of us except, well, Bruce was also a producer as well as an actor. So, but the rest of us don't make any royalties. We've never made anything off The Evil Dead except our very basic pay. And then I think, at one point, I think we got $2,500 if it reached a certain amount in the box office or something. Yeah. And that's it. So that led to the other two women and I deciding to start going to conventions and you know, finally earn some money off of this thing we did so many years ago.
What's the, yeah, because that was actually something I had to ask you, but you know, you've got the, so you were almost kind of telling the story in chapters where it's like you start with, or acts, if you will. I know you're into performance, but you know, we start with your, you getting into performance, then it's the filming of the movie. And like, here's this, this kind of act three is kind of post movie and you're going to conventions. What's that experience like? If you could kind of walk us through what that mania is probably like when you go to the horror conventions.
It was such an eye opener because so Teresa and Betsy are the other two women in the film. And we basically all decided to do it. I think it was the 20th or 25th anniversary of the film. And because we had seen, you know, other people do it. We had seen Bruce do it and we had seen other actors. And so it was a whole new world for us. We started going to conventions. And we were all mothers of young children. And so, you know, we were like soccer moms. And so we would be soccer moms and then we would like put on different clothes and go to these crazy horror conventions over the weekend and be in this, it was like having a double life, basically. Yeah. And was fun. I mean, they're still doing it. I kind of cut out a couple years ago after 20 years of doing it, that was enough. But you know, it's interesting to meet the fans. It's interesting that it's appeals to all ages and you have fathers, grandfathers bringing in their children and grandchildren and some of them too young to be at horror conventions, I might add.
Yeah.
And whole new world. And then from they wear
little kids with like little chainsaw arms that they slip on. And
it's a whole different world.
And Linda Blair is there. And
Linda Blair. Well, okay. So that's actually interesting because you know, Julie and I were talking in a little pre-show prep, but you know, there's this kind of reemergence and, you know, it's a time of nostalgia in cinema anyway, but you've got Jamie Lee Curtis doing Halloween 14. How do you feel about that? Where it's like the subgenre of the 70s stars and all of that, like
coming back and redoing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I myself was in a couple episodes of Ash versus the Evil Dead TV show that was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, which was really fun because there was actually a budget. And so we were treated really well and we were comfortable and
you're like, that's the chili pot guy. He's back.
That was fun. And then I also, the last thing I did for the Evil Dead Empire was I voiced a character on the Evil Dead video game that's came out, I don't know, a year ago or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that was really fun. But I don't know, like people ask me, how do you feel about the, I don't have any investment in the horror community and what's happening in the horror world because it's not my world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, you kind of parachute in.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
I always think it's so interesting and it seems like you're surprised at the success of the movie. Like when you're making it and you're like, okay, I'll kind of subject myself to a lot of this stuff. And, you know, Julie calls it torture or, you know, I'll bring myself to the ringer because I'm game. And you're like, it's probably, like, you know, a few hundred people will see it. But it's always interesting to me when you're making it, when I interview different people and they're making things that become iconic that they don't know it's going to be iconic when they make it. Right. Like the guy who edited Star Wars or the Wes Anderson cinematographer, it's like you don't know. You're just doing it to the best of your ability. It seems like that's your experience as well.
Absolutely. And it was even more so because, like I said, I'd been making little movies with them for several years. And to me, it's like, oh, we're going to make another little movie.
Yeah, you know? It's a lark, sure. Right?
It wasn't, there was no awareness to me anyway, that this was the start of something something big, you know?
Yeah.
Would you
what did Jesse and Allie think when they saw it?
Your daughters.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I need to.
Now, they don't know that these people.
Your children. I know. I just assume they're all my friends.
Yeah. So so it was interesting to see their two different reactions. So like I said, once the cat was out of the bag and they found out I was in it, Jesse, first of all, they were both mad that I didn't tell them. Second of all, my oldest, who is now an actress, was very excited, wanted to see it, wanted to talk about it with all her friends. And my youngest was like, who cares? Can I go, like, can I go play with my dolls now? You know, like, and that was kind of how it went through their teenage years, is that like, Jesse was all into it and Allie was like, that's my mom. I don't really, I don't really care. Yeah.
So Jesse is an actress and Jesse Hodges, mm-hmm. and married to SNL alumni Beck Bennett, who I just think is hilarious as well. But she's on shows like Barry, and she's had a very successful career. Do you think kind of knowing and kind of seeing her mother, you know, within the industry and things, do you think that was a catalyst for her to
No, she was already going. She was doing children's theater and stuff well before she knew. I mean, you know, I guess I had told her that I was in things, and I'm trying to remember if I did. I did do a little bit of performing theater when she was young. I did some musicals and a few things, but I think Jesse came out of the womb.
She had it in the DNA.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, she just knowing you as, you know, I'm Julie's nephew, and, you know, being around you as I'm growing up in through my childhood, I know Allie really well. I've met Jesse, and I knew that you guys took your kids to Interlochen, which is a very popular arts camp every summer. Yes. And I know, let's just, we can bring it full circle here, but you know, Julie's got an Interlochen hoodie on right now. I know you guys, you still to this day, all these years later, love to sing Ellen, and you're part of a choir. You guys practice choir every summer. Tell me about the choir scene now.
Do we want to talk about our choir scene?
Let's talk. I want to open up some space for you to talk about the choir.
And I don't want to offend any Interlochen choir stirs.
Of course not. No.
But so Ellen and I are the coolest people in that choir. I mean, the fact that we even show up every summer, they should just be thrilled that we're there.
I love it.
Even just for our personalities. Like, even if we never sung a note. But
it's so funny. No, I went to Interlochen as a kid. I started out there playing cello and then kind of evolved into acting and singing. Both my kids went there. My sister went there. It's always been my happy place because it kind of marries my two of my biggest loves, which is arts and nature. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the idea that you're walking through the woods and you hear a string quartet playing, and when you're in the big auditorium, you see the sun setting over the lake behind it. It's just, it's a happy place for me. So yeah, when I found out that they do an adult choir,
I was like,
sign me up. And then I made Julie come, and now we're both.
Now we're in there together. And it's a thrill because when Paulina and Allie were going and Jesse was there, and I would go and see their performances, and I thought, if only, and now I'm actually a camper.
And now the woods are a happy place.
That's right, they were spooky.
And now we walk through the woods
without a care.
The sun is setting in a beautiful, happy forest. Nature. It's funny that you say I love nature. And then it's like some of the most horrific moments of my life I captured on screen are in nature.
Well, that's, you know, so of course, when I said that I had to develop a sense of humor about certain scenes in The Evil Dead, you know, when we would talk at conventions, I started having one-liners about, you know, Yeah, the tree scene was tough, but now I have a, you know, my son whose name is Bud.
Okay.
And, or my daughter whose name is Fern, you know. So you got
that's good bit.
What do you say about being raped by the woods? You have it has to be absurd and funny, but it's true. I am a nature girl. I now live in a beautiful place where there's nature all around me, and with the thing about singing in a choir now, and Julie can attest to this because she is an incredible singer. I used to be all about the solo singing and being in the spotlight and being the, yeah, you know, the lead. And now I just want to be part of a big ensemble where nobody's focusing on my voice cracking and just being part of making music.
It's the best of all worlds.
It really is.
A great time, and we do sing in separate. Of course, my choir that I'm singing in now is women singing Joni Mitchell in three-part harmony. And she's
I looked at love from both sides now.
She's singing in with the Asheville Symphony. So yeah, they are two different
it's part of the creative journey. And that's, I really love hearing your story.
No shade to my choir ladies, no shade at all. But
Ellen, I love that, you know, you've got this creative energy about you, and you're just one thing I like to try to tell myself is try to do something creative every day, whether it's at work, in my workplace. This podcast is obviously a creative outlet for me, and you just never know where it's going to take you. And so being creative has led you to a lot of experiences, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
I couldn't agree more. I think that when you're a kid and you grow up doing creative things, it's just in your blood. You just got to keep doing that to feel fulfilled somehow. Yeah.
And she's done short films. She's done films with people where she's had dramatic turns. And so, I mean, she's kept it going, and she says yes. I think that's what keeps her so young. Yeah. Is that she
yes
says,
and
yes and yes.
For the most part, I'm trying to not say yes so much anymore, but yeah.
And I didn't know that the ladies of the Evil Dead were still the two other ladies.
They are still doing, basically what I've said to them is, if we can be brought to a really cool exotic place to do a convention,
like Fiji,
I'll go.
But I'm not going to Canton, Ohio.
Yeah, but you know, like, yeah,
nobody
or whatever.
That's grand.
I remember one of my just glowing moments of my life, not just my children, but that I was at Comic-Con with Alan, and fans would think that I was a lady.
No, that's right.
And I would not discourage it. It would be like, well, we want you in the photo too. And I'd be like, okay. $20
$20.
It's absolutely true.
And I thought, oh my God, I could do this all day long, but I can imagine that it's exhausting.
It's really tiring. Yeah, it really is. And you know, it was a great experience. I did it for a long time.
A long time.
Yeah.
All over the world.
Have you seen the musical? Have you gone and seen the musical?
I've seen several different iterations of it.
Oh, okay. I have my friend David Lipschitz, a huge fan. You've actually signed a photo for him for his birthday. Oh, okay. But he was just in the musical. He says one of his lifelong career goals was to be in it, and he finally got to be in it. I didn't go see it because I had other things to do. But I have seen it as well. What do you think? You're a musical person. There's your character being put into a musical. What was that experience?
I absolutely love it. I sat there and laughed and smiled. I saw it in Toronto, Chicago, and then off Broadway.
Oh yeah.
And you know, they were all really different productions, but just hilarious. I think they did a really nice job. And
Ellen's alley.
It's quite an experience to see a character that you created then recreated in a musical. It's just
my favorite iteration. Ellen and I went to see it at the Boxer Rebellion. I don't even know if that still exists in Chicago.
I don't think so. No.
And then we went to Toronto and we saw this production, And I kept saying to her, how do you think they're going to conceive this woods scene? Yeah. How are they going to do this? These are little tiny box stages. And the best one was Cheryl ran up the aisle in these hula hoops that had vines wrapped around them.
I forgot.
Down around her, lowered yes. down these hula yes. hoops. And she was like,
I did not remember that, which doesn't surprise you because I don't remember anything, but Jules is my memory.
And yeah. I was dying. I thought, who are these brilliant young people that are coming up with these things?
They've got that creative spirit, just like Sam and Bruce in their 20s.
How do we pull it off? $5 worth of hula hoops from the dollar store coming down. Right. I was dying.
It was hilarious.
Keep it going. I'm telling you, I could watch that movie. I mean, I don't even watch it during Halloween. I watch it just as a regular thing.
God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for you.
Last question I'll ask here is there anything that you've done these interviews a billion times over, all the Comic Cons, is there anything that somebody that you wish somebody would ask you but they never have?
I can't think of anything. I mean, I've been asked everything, I feel like. And
I missed out on dates.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a wild ride. And, you know, I think that it's a coexistence of all these kind of different parts of me and different parts of people. People want to put you in a box and say, okay, she was in a horror movie, so she's a horror person. And you can be all sorts of things simultaneously. And it doesn't, I think people just need to not try to put people in boxes.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, I was literally just reading about Jamie Lee Curtis and her Halloween thing and how she's dealt with being in, you know, a quote aging actress and stuff. Yeah. And, you know, for sure she's not a horror person. She was not a fan. She was hired to be in a horror movie and it really did well. And then they asked her to do it again and she did, you know, so, yeah, I guess that's.
Yeah, I think that's good. And there's a lot of different aspects to an artist besides just what the one thing you might happen to know them on. So I think that's right. I think that's a great way to end. So thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate your time. I hope everyone gets to see different sides of you here and gets a little bit of the behind the scenes. My favorite part of the conversation was the chili pot guy. So it reminds me of Kevin from The Office. That's what I'm seeing. It's just some like Kevin from The Office stirred up chili for you guys before you guys go off into the woods. So.
Right. Well, it's been a pleasure doing this. You know, I have known you since you were a
young stinker.
Teenager. I think, and it's been fun to see you grow up. And of course, Jules, like, what can I say? My heart and my co-conspirator.
Troublemakers.
Yeah, I like being a 60-something troublemaker. Jules is not a 60-something yet.
Not yet. I'm almost there, but we have managed to get in a lot of trouble in our lives. And I wouldn't take back a second of it.
I know.
But I'm thrilled that you could be here, baby.
Thank you.
I'm looking at
that gorgeous kitchen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Come back for part two where we talk about Evelyn's kitchen. Ooh,
the kitchen. That's some new cabinets.
This is radio, not television, everybody. So we're getting a quick tour here of the kitchen as we sign off with some stainless steel appliances.
At any moment, there can be a bear outside of her back door just knocking on the door. It's kind of alarming, but she. As I told you, she's
game.
The most courageous woman. She's like, oh, don't worry.
That's just the bear.
The bear.
I was in the evil dad. I can deal with the bear.
Exactly. All right, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, audience, for listening. Wow. Don't forget to wash your hands and stay safe. And we'll see you down the road, everyone. Happy Halloween.
Bye.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.